Well, many thanks to Bill Campbell and Roger Rehm for inviting me. It's indeed an honor to speak before the Philadelphia Society. America is still an exceptional nation, and so long as it exists, it always will be. This may seem to be a claim of exceptional arrogance, but I make this claim not because of America's current political, economic, or military standing. America is exceptional because of the exceptional ideas upon which this nation was founded. Alexis de Tocqueville is often cited as the originator of the idea of American exceptionalism, but in fact, America's founding fathers deemed their own efforts exceptional. Take, for example, James Madison's statement as Publius in Federalist 14, and here I quote, "Happily for America, happily we trust for the whole human race, the American revolutionaries pursued a new and more noble course. They accomplished a revolution that has no parallels in the annals of human society. They reared the fabrics of governments which have no model on the face of the globe." Many other similar statements from other leading lights of the founding reveal to us what was obvious to them. The American experiment of self-government under law was new, unparalleled, and exceptional. As John Adams described what happened in the American Revolution, quote, "The radical change in the principles, opinions, sentiments, and affections of the people, that was the real American Revolution." This is not Saul Alinsky or Howard Zinn radicalism. It is not even a distant cousin of the radicalism of the French Revolution, which was born of anti-religious ire and leveling zeal. Rather, the radicalism of which Adams wrote impelled everyday Americans to go to the root of the matter, as the Latin root radix suggests they should. The radicalism of the American Revolution insisted that the idea of natural rights is the surest foundation of a great regime. The founders were mostly grateful for their British patrimony, but as Adams makes clear in this 1819 letter to Hezekiah Niles, from which I just quoted, the revolution also did in fact effect a break from the British. What then is exceptional about America's birth? Let me suggest five key components. The first is the natural rights foundation of the American regime. Secondly, a written constitution whose structure is indebted to but not subsumed in the natural law tradition or the common law tradition. Thirdly, the combination of a national legislature that guards against majority tyranny, a powerful executive, and an independent judiciary, each of which is subservient to the supreme law of the land. Fourthly, then, an unmatched commitment to universal equality with the recognition that such is the gift of God. And fifthly, the establishment of religious freedom as opposed to toleration or some other system of grudging accommodation. These aspects of America's exceptional founding make possible our exceptionalism, which we can see clearly in five major accomplishments: the bold spirit of American individualism, the rule of law, responsible constitutionalism, unparalleled opportunity, and unmatched generosity. Let me say just a word about each of these five aspects. The affirmation of the natural rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness has enabled individual Americans to chart their own course to the acquisition of wealth, to the exploration of new territory, and the discovery of new inventions. This has translated economically into an entrepreneurial culture that still boasts, amazingly enough, the highest productivity rates in the world. Secondly, our Constitution enables the rule of law. The American Constitution is the oldest national charter still in force in the world. Thirdly, responsible constitutionalism. The separation of powers and the system of federalism that results from a limited grant of power to the national legislature allows more than 500,000 Americans every year to hold elected political office. America has more than 87,000 units of government, however much the impetuous vortex of Washington reduces that number, or at least seems to reduce that number daily. Fourthly, then, unparalleled opportunity. Opportunity for high achievement by those who start on lower ground in education, income, and business and political leadership is more widespread and longer enduring than in any other nation on earth, large or small. Fifthly, our unmatched generosity. Americans, many of whom are motivated by religious impulse, give away each year $250 billion. No other developed country in the world, Arthur Brooks reports, can come even close to American philanthropic and voluntary activity. Now, the topic of this panel is the question, is America still an exceptional nation? However much we might believe that we have been an exceptional nation in the past, this conviction no longer is commonplace in our schools. Still, despite the social studies pablum that American students have been fed for well over a generation, most Americans yet believe, however inchoately, that they are citizens of an exceptional country. These citizens, I think, seek statesmen who can tell them why this was the case, why it is now, and why America in the future can be exceptional. Even more, citizens seek statesmen who will prudently act on that understanding. I believe America is indeed an exceptional nation, but one now greatly tempted by pride. America's greatest moments have been marked by humility, but we are not always humble. In fact, we struggle to avoid arrogance. As Benjamin Franklin concluded in his autobiography more than 225 years ago, quote, "In reality, there is perhaps no one of our national passions so hard to subdue as pride." What he meant really was arrogance or disordered pride. And what he set out to reform in his own life, he saw as our national challenge as well. It is a vexing challenge indeed, for as Franklin concluded, quote, "Even if I conceive that I had completely overcome pride, I should probably be proud of my humility." Humility keeps our national vices in check at the same time it enables our other virtues. Humility of heart and mind makes prudence possible. It prepares the way for wisdom, enables justice, and encourages temperance. Humility helps us to be courageous for the right causes. Humility can keep and help Americans by doing five things. It can keep individualism from degenerating into subjectivism or relativism. A little bit of humility prevents the rule of law from degenerating into the rule of lawyers. Humility precludes responsible constitutionalism from degenerating into government being responsible for all. It also keeps unparalleled opportunity from degenerating into unvarnished greed. Finally, humility can help unmatched generosity from degenerating into unequaled redistribution of wealth. For the last 100 years, America's original experiment of self-government under law has been at odds with an alternative political experiment. This experiment was started by the progressives. Doubting the underlying ideas and efficacy of the founding experiment, the progressives, proud of their German learning and theoretical expertise, sought a new republic in the term advanced by Herbert Croly, founder of the magazine by that same name. The progressive project that resulted elevates the collective over the individual. It exalts not the rule of law, but the reign of experts. Instead of a government responsible to the people, it gives a government responsible for them. In place of opportunity and generosity, we get dependence. Progressivism attacks the genuine pride we should have in our country with the claim that every country is exceptional in its own way. America has much about which we should be sorry, progressives proclaim. America is guilty of hubris. Notice, by the way, that when President Obama noted that the Greeks have a certain notion of exceptionalism and the British, he points to two empires. What might that suggest about his view of American exceptionalism? It's impossible to pin down every current problem in America on progressivism. Being exceptional, after all, does not exempt a nation's people from original sin. But progressivism, I would suggest, and the political experiment it has substituted in place of that of the founders, has produced a country far less exceptional than we could be. As a people and even a nation, we are sometimes guilty of hubris, but not for the same reason that the progressives purport. We are arrogant when we subscribe to progressive ideology and suppose we can throw off the wisdom of our founding principles and yet continue to achieve the same results. We see this ideological arrogance at work in President Obama's repeated declaration that America needs what he's called a new foundation. It's tempting at a point in a program on America at the Crossroads to suggest that we live in a uniquely arrogant age. However, to proclaim one age more arrogant than another is to ignore history and human nature. For both the undulations of history and the fixity of human nature reveal that throughout history, excessive pride has preceded countless falls. After the 5th century fall of Rome, one of the most spectacular of political failures, St. Augustine tried to explain the eternal city's demise in a book written, quote, to convince the proud and the powerful of the excellence of humility. Arrogance, not just pride, Augustine argued, is natural to politics. Both are endemic to the human condition. Each is ineradicable. The age in which imperial Rome fell was no less stained by arrogance than the day on which republican Rome was founded. According to Augustine, all regimes have sinned and fallen short of glory. None is perfect, nor is any capable of perfection. Political pride could be tempered by humility, he argued, but even then, any success would itself be accompanied by constant sorrows. As one of the biblical passages Augustine most often quoted says, the greater you are, the more you must humble yourself. Humble yourself, or you may be humbled. Today, exactly 1,600 years since the fall of Rome, America stands as a superpower. But for how long? Stretched thin with a global war and prodigious debt, and infatuated with fatuousness, America looks like imperial Rome in its dotage. Our domestic disregard for the sanctity of human life, an anemic public education system, among many other strong indicators of decline, can only make us wonder whether we will meet a fate similar to that of Rome's. Yesterday, April 9th, was Tax Freedom Day. The average American worked from January 1st until yesterday, the Tax Foundation tells us, to pay his federal, state, and local income taxes. So from today forward, we get to keep what we earn. Despite all this, America is not Rome. Our founding principles are as exceptional today as they were in 1776. The principles do not change, however much the adherence to them might. That these principles are besieged in practice means that we must more ably rally to their defense. The Great Seal of the United States reminds us that today this defense must proceed with humility. Looking to Republican Rome for inspiration in 1782, the creators of the Great Seal, commissioned by Congress, emblazoned it with a quotation from the Aeneid, Anuit coeptis, God has smiled on our beginnings. Taken one way, this could be seen as very much of a kind of arrogant claim. We have God's blessing and no one else does. Kind of civil religion. Taken another way, the way I think is most reasonable, this claim was humble. Divine providence helped make our founding successful, but to ensure future blessings, we must keep to a humble path in which we also love mercy and do justice, as is required by the Almighty. This humility does not mean an abandonment of proper pride in America's exceptionalism. It does, however, guard against national arrogance. Even more, it helps us to act worthy of the blessings of liberty.